Well, many of you may already know because I've talked about it before, but for some reason, Kate and I, we decided this past Christmas to go out and buy our kids a beagle puppy, okay? And so we did that, and it was one of those like things I want to mark off the list of my life, like having your kids open up a dog on Christmas. And so we did that, and it's been okay over the last few months. I don't think we picked out the brightest dog out there. In fact, this dog, what I've realized is it's way harder to train than our previous dogs that we've had before. Our previous dogs did like normal dog things, like come to you when you called. I like that. And sitting when you tell them to sit. And they didn't just stand in the backyard, kind of look up at the sky and just bark. Okay, that's what our dog does for some reason. But the kids love her, and so that's what we got. We got a dog. But a few days ago, Kate, she went to the back door. She was going to let the dog in for the night, and there was no dog. And so we were looking around, and again, I don't have the most obedient animal. And she somehow got out. And so Kate and I, we went looking for it, and I did a decent lap around the block, and I was like, well, it's gone. You know, like, dog's lost. It had a good run, right? Like, it had a good few months. Who knows where the dog is? And Kate, she's not like that. And so she's like, she spent like an hour out there. She's looking. She comes in. She cannot find this dog. And at this point, it's like late at night. It's dark. You can't see anything anyway. And our dog doesn't come to us when we call. So it's like, even if she saw you, it's not like, do you even have a chance? You know, it's that type of thing. And so we have this lost dog. I'm annoyed. The kids are all sad. I got one kid crying. Like, it's just not the way that you want to end the night. And so they go to bed, and Kate gets on Facebook, and she finds our dog. Somebody found our dog. And so this is what we found. And there she is. She has no microchip. I don't even know what that is, okay? And she had no license, and so I was getting ready to pay for that, I guess, apparently. I was going to get to that and just hadn't gotten to that yet. It turns out that you have to pay the government for a license for the privilege to own a dog that you already own and don't actually like. And so that seems like a no-win situation for me, but that's just how it is. And so the next day, we were able to pick it up that night. The next day, I went to go get my dog and at the dog warden. And whenever you go to a place like that, like the pound or dog warden or whatever it's technically called, like you feel like a terrible owner. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, you know, you're the one who didn't keep track. Like the dog ran away from you, you know, like not a great look for any owner. And so while I am mad and annoyed at this dog, I'm also on my best behavior. You know what I'm talking about? Like I'm like, oh yeah, there it is. Oh, little Molly. Her name's Molly. So I'm like, oh, Molly. Yeah, you know, okay. One thing that's funny is on the way out, I like got this dog on the leash. I paid my fees. Okay. She's licensed now and all the stuff, you know, and, I'm taking her out to the car and I actually accidentally stepped on her paw and she started yelping and I'm like, not here. You know, like not the dog warden's like right on the other side of his door. Like chill out, like shut up dog. You know, stupid dog, you know. But anyway, I don't abuse my animals or anything. I was just, yeah. So here's the deal. Like, even though this is not my favorite dog, okay, and it's not, there is a relief of it being found. You know what I'm talking about? Right? Even if it's not like the best thing ever, there's a relief of something that was lost being found. In fact, last week, Mike talked about a time when Jesus described how God views us. Like, think about that for a second. Do you ever just think about that? Like, do you ever ask yourself, like, what do you think God thinks when God thinks about you? You ever think about that, right? What does God think about when he thinks about you? And what we found out last week is that Jesus, he kind of separates us into two categories. And it's not the way that we would do it. I mean, we view each other as like, you're rich, you're poor, you're good, you're bad, right? Jesus separates us into you are either a lost person or you are a found person, right? You are either lost or found. And one day, Jesus teaches us this, which is what Mike began to talk about last week. In fact, he's talking to an entire crowd, which was very, very, very normal for Jesus. In fact, wherever Jesus went, the Bible tells us that crowds just kind of gathered around, like crowds of people would follow this Jesus guy because Jesus was saying things that no one had ever heard anybody say before, and he was doing things that no one had ever seen anybody do before. And so crowds of people would gather around Jesus, And it was all different types of people. In fact, on this particular day, he says all the tax collectors and all the sinners were approaching Jesus to listen. Now, real quick, tax collectors, these aren't like IRS agents that nobody likes. And by the way, just to throw this out there, like if you work for the IRS, we here at Grace love you, all right, because we have to, but we do, and we hope you come to Jesus and leave the rest of us alone, all right, that's what we hope. But these guys are way worse than like an IRS agent, right? These guys were actually, they worked for the Roman government who was oppressing the Jewish people. So think about it. These are Jewish guys who are working for the enemy, working for the oppressive foreign government, extracting taxes from their own people. And so because of that, they were considered traitors. In fact, they were hated, and rightly so in a sense, because these people, these tax collectors, they cared more about wealth and they cared more about money than they did relationships with their own people and with their family. And so they put money before everything else. They were greedy, and that's what they were known for. And so that's what these people were known for. They were like the lowest of the low within society. But these are the types of people that came to Jesus. It's interesting because people who are nothing like Jesus, interestingly enough, actually liked Jesus. And Jesus, guess what? Liked them back. And so as you can imagine, you got these tax collectors and just these sinners, these people who are kind of the worst of society, they come to listen to Jesus. And so the Pharisees and the scribes, these were the exact opposite. These are the self-righteous. These are the religious people. These are the good people. These are the donors to all of the different causes. I mean, these are the people that do a bunch of good stuff in the community and are ultra religious. They pray all the time. They do all the church stuff. He says, and so those people were complaining, saying this man, Jesus, he welcomes sinners and he eats with them. Like, what's up with that? They're complaining that Jesus would spend time with these traitors and with the worst of society. And so this crowd that's listening to Jesus, what I want us to understand before we jump into the story that Jesus is going to tell us, is this crowd's mixed with two different types of people. I mean, this crowd's mixed with both. It's got a bunch of people who are so messed up and they know it, and it's also got the super religious people. Both groups, by the way, are confused about what God is like. And Jesus, on this particular day, he wants to set the record straight. And so he begins by talking about losing stuff. Now, if you're like me, you hate when stuff gets lost. Right? Don't you hate it? You hate when you lose the remote and you're like, you've checked all the cushions. You're like, it should be here, you know, and it's just not. We all hate when stuff gets lost. Like, I don't know anybody who's like, you know, what are you doing this weekend? You're like, I don't know. Like, I have nothing on my plate right now, but hopefully my dog gets lost. And so I can spend all my time this weekend looking for that. Like, that would be real fun. Nobody likes to look for, you know, we don't like to look for our lost stuff. So Jesus starts talking about losing stuff. And as Mike talked about last week, he brings up, number one, he talks about losing sheep, he talks about losing money, and basically how sometimes you can lose something that's generally not even worth all that much, but yet because it belongs to you, and because it's lost, like it becomes a big deal to you. And so this whole crowd, as Jesus explains some of that stuff that we talked about last week, the whole crowd doesn't understand where Jesus is going with any of this. Like, this is just kind of weird. It's like, okay, Jesus, like, what's the deal? Lost stuff, like, we're on the same page here. And so Jesus decides to tell the crowd a story, which he did often. And the picture that Jesus is trying to paint is he wants the crowd to understand that God is like a good dad. He wants the crowd to understand what God is like, and how God is actually like a good dad, and we are like his jacked up kids. Okay, we got that? We good? All right, so going into this, Jesus, he says, okay, he's talking to this crowd of people. We got both types of people in the crowd, and he says, picture this. He says, picture a man who's got like two sons. He says, the younger son, he said to his dad, he's like, hey, dad, what's up? Hey, could you give me the share of my inheritance that I've come to me? Is that cool? Can you just hand that over? Because that would be awesome. Can we do that now? Now, when the crowd heard this, you got to understand that both groups of people, the good people and the bad people, both of them would have like audibly gasped, like, like this is like, you just don't do this. Basically, what's going on here is this kid is waiting for his dad to die, and his dad, instead of dying, is just getting older and older and older. Like, the guy won't die. And this kid actually gets impatient, And so he goes to his dad, and basically what he's saying here is he's saying, Dad, I wish you were dead so that I can have my inheritance that I want you to give me from your stuff. And so, Dad, is there any way, like, can we cheat the system? Like, can we speed this process up? Or I want my inheritance now. And so everybody in the crowd, as they're listening to Jesus say this, I mean, they're just like, man, how is this dad going to respond? Like, is he going to disown him? Like, is he going to kick him out of the house? Like, man, that is dirty. Like, think about it for you. How would you respond if your kid said that to you? And so Jesus, he got him kind of on the hook. And he's so, you know, he's so smart in all this. And he gives them a twist. He says, so that dad, you know what he did? And they're like, what did he do? He's like, he distributed the assets to him. And the crowd's just like, why would he give in to that? Like, is that even good for the kid? Like, why would he do that? And this, by the way, is not, hey, let me stop by the bank and I'll pull some money out and I'll give you your inheritance. This is the guy, the dad's giving away like half of his stuff. He's got to go sell a bunch of stuff to make this possible. I mean, he's got to, you know, he's reducing his wealth by half. I mean, this is a big deal. It takes a bunch of effort and a bunch of work on the dad's part. And the reason his dad decides to do this is because his son that he cares about is already lost. And the dad wants him back. And of course, he's not lost physically. Like, again, they're talking with each other right there. He's lost relationally. And that matters the most to the dad. And so the dad is willing to do anything to get his son back, even as much as to let him go. So he did it. Gives him his money. And sure enough, not many days later, the younger son, he gathered together all that he had, and he's got a bag full of money. And he traveled to a distant country where he's just squandered his estate in foolish living. I mean, this kid, he takes the money, he runs, and he runs through that money that it took his dad a half a lifetime to build. And he runs through it just living it up. And after he had spent everything, a severe like drought, a famine struck the land. And this isn't like drought like, oh, I went to Aldi and there's no milk and bread today. And so, oh no, what are we going to do? Like that type of thing. That's not drought to them, to first century people. I mean, drought, this is like there is no food. There hasn't been rain for a long time. The plants aren't growing. Animals are dying. There is no food out there. And it just so happens that this happens right after this kid kind of runs through his money, and he is sitting there, and he has nothing. And so as we sit here today, and as the crowd sat and listened to Jesus, I mean, most of us, we're all thinking the same thing. Like, that's what this kid deserves. Like, good for him. This is justice. This almost seems like it's good for the kid. Teach him, you know, of how bad that he treated his father and just all that stuff. And it was bad. In fact, it got so bad that this kid, guess what? He had to go out, and for the first time in his life, he had to go get a job. You know, that type of thing. And so he goes, and he got a job, and he went to work for one of the citizens of that country who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And this, to the original Jewish audience, I mean, this would have been like nails on a chalkboard to him. Like, oh no, pigs, like not pigs. That's so embarrassing. That's terrible. That's so dirty. He said, in fact, it got so bad that he longed to eat his fill from the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one would give him anything. See, for the Jewish audience, working with pigs, I mean, this was like the lowest of the low. This was the most shameful job you could possibly have. I mean, it was just nasty. Like, pigs just in general are like just kind of dirty animals. This past summer, my middle child, Wes, he did that pig scramble thing at the fair. You know what I'm talking about? And so he went and did that. And as we're driving there, he's like, hey, Dad, when? And I'm like, when? Okay. He's like, when can I get, when I get my pig? Like, when I catch it? Like, I get to keep it, right? And I'm like, oh, sure, kid. Yeah, whatever you want. Yeah, we'll keep the pig, knowing that there'd be very, very little chance that he'd... What I did not expect is that he would catch one, okay? So he did. He drugged that thing, and he got the pig. And so it wasn't coming back to my house, and so I sent it with Zach and Charlie Ziegler. So it was at their house. And by the way, bacon is scheduled for November, so we're excited for that. But But Wes and I, once in a while when Zach and Charlie have been on vacation and stuff, we've gone over there to water the pigs. And there's only three pigs in their barn, but it's interesting. You get out of the car and you start walking up to the barn. Like, you smell them from afar, like from a distance. You know what I'm talking about? Like, pigs just have it's a different smell, man. Like, it's just different than other animals. And they're just naturally just kind of dirty animals. See, back in Jesus' time, for a Jewish man, I mean, think about it. Jewish people, they don't even eat pig, you know? They don't eat bacon or anything like that. For them, working with pigs, I mean, this was low. It was degrading. It was embarrassing to the entire family name. I mean, that is what this kid is experiencing. And on top of that, this kid is starving to death. And so again, everybody in the crowd, maybe for the first time, they all agree on the same thing, you know, the good people and the bad people. But they're all like, yeah, this is right. This is what he deserves. This right here is justice. But Jesus keeps talking. In fact, Jesus tells him, he says, well, that son starts thinking to himself. As he's sitting there watching those pigs eat, he's like, man, I wish I could eat that. He starts thinking to himself, he's like, man, my dad's lowest workers, like at the bottom of the rung, these are like the, you know, the hired hands that were cleaning out stalls in the, you know, in the barn or whatever it was, like the lowest of the low of the people that work for his dad. He's like, they're not rich and they don't have much money. They're not paid very much, but they eat better than this. Like, they have a better life than what I got right now. And so he decides to head home thinking that maybe his dad will hire him as like the lowest rung on the totem pole. And so he goes, he starts walking home, and he prepares this little pathetic speech. And he got up and he went to his dad. But while the son was still a long way off, his father saw him coming, and he was filled with, in the crowd maybe were like throwing in fillers here. They're like filled with anger and resentment and disappointment at all the things that this kid took all this money and just, not only was he extremely rude to his dad and disrespectful to his dad, but he's like not a good businessman. I mean, he just wasted it. Like, how stupid do you have to be? I mean, this kid, you know, everybody in the crowd, they're waiting. They're like, man, this is going to be good. Like, this dad is going to set him straight. Because that's what they would do. Because that's what I would do. And you would do. But they didn't know what the dad would do because they didn't know what the dad was like. And see, that's the reason why Jesus came, by the way, is to show us what God was actually like. You get that? And so he's filled with, and Jesus says, no. He's filled with compassion. The crowd's like, what? Compassion? What are you talking about? And Jesus pushes even further. He says, and then he ran. That was something in the first century that men just did not do. All right, men, don't run. Like, that's a big thing for them back then. And so that was embarrassing in and of itself. He's like, but this dad did not care. All right, he hiked up his robes, and he started running, and he threw his arms around his kid's neck, and he kissed him. And it's just like the crowd's just like, they cannot get past this. They're like, whoa, you're saying the dad ran? That doesn't make any sense. Jesus is like, yeah, he ran because he did not care. After he touched the pigs, he's like, yeah, after he touched the pigs, the kid still smells like pig. Like, it's not like, you know, he had time to stop off at a Motel 6 or something, you know, to get washed up. This is like, and Jesus is like, yeah, he ran. And by the way, this dad and God in our situation is not just annoyed that the kid's lost and when the kid is found or when one of us are found feels that, like, relief, you know, but is still angry and is still annoyed and still doesn't appreciate what the kid's done, kind of like me and my dog, okay? Now, this dad is overjoyed. He is so excited. He is so happy. And this kid, as his dad runs up, I mean, he's not expecting this. I mean, he starts in on his little pathetic speech, but the dad interrupts him, and he starts barking out orders to everybody. He's like, hey, yo, get some clothes. This kid needs clothes. Look at him. All right, get some shoes. He has no shoes. All right, get those. Hey, cut up some steaks. This kid needs fed. Like we are going to party. We are going to celebrate tonight. He says, because this son of mine was dead, and now he is alive again. He was lost, but now he is found. And so they began to celebrate. Do you realize that this is how God feels when just one of us lost people come home? Do you realize that? Meaning, when we, and a lot of us have done this, there's people in this room that haven't done this yet, but when we come to our senses and we realize that, hey, I'm not just some mistaker that needs like a life coach, I'm dead in my sin because of my sin, and I want to be free and I want to be alive and I need someone to fix the sin problem within my life because I'm not good enough to fix it. Do you realize that when you come to that realization that God of the universe feels compassion on you? And maybe, I don't know, maybe the people in the crowd start to understand the story. Right? Like the worst of the worst, the non-religious people. Maybe they're like, whoa, Jesus, hold up, question. Are you saying that God wants a relationship with someone like me? After all I've done? And maybe the self-righteous people and the religious people, like they're on the other side, they're like, whoa, Jesus, this doesn't make any sense. Are you saying that God desires a relationship with those people after all they've done? See, sometimes I feel like it's easier for the rebel to get right with God because your life sucks and it's broken and you know it. You've been there. You've hit the rock bottom. It's the religious people that have the most trouble, in my experience, because you don't think you need him, because you think you got it yourself, because you think your good stuff will outweigh your bad stuff. I mean, you've done some pretty good stuff, and so you're like, well, that's got to count for something. It's like a lot of people think that God really benefited when he made you. See, Jesus knows what they're thinking, and that's an issue, but Jesus, he's not done. He says, now, think about the older son. All right, this is the firstborn, this is the well-behaved, this is the rule follower, super religious guy. He's like, he was in the field, and as he came near the house, he heard that music and dancing. And so he calls someone over, he's like, what is going on? He starts asking questions, and he finds out that his little bro has come back, and his dad has welcomed him with open arms after all he's done. And this really, really, really bothers the older son. And so he became angry. And he's like, I'm not going into that party. I'm not celebrating with him. That kid deserves punishment, right? He doesn't deserve to, you know, to party, right? So his dad came out and pleaded with him. You get what's going on here? Both sons are running from their dad in their own way. Both sons have a broken relationship with their dad. Both sons, by the way, are using their dad to get what they want. Man, they're just using different tactics. One follows the rules to get what they want. One breaks the rules to get what they want. And so the dad comes out and he pleads with him. Meaning the dad comes out and he begs him. See, they have a broken relationship too. And he says, no, I want you to come in. I want that relationship with you. And the older son, he looks at him. He's like, yo, dad. He says, look, here's the deal. I have been slaving away many years for you. He's like, I've done everything you've ever asked. I've done all the religious stuff. I've checked off all the boxes. I've done all the things. He says, and I have never disobeyed your orders, which if you're a parent in here, you're like, okay, yeah, right. All right, that's not true. He says, yet you never gave me even a goat. I actually had to look that up. I was like, did he mean boat? I get goat. I get boat, you know, but goat, you know. He's like, you never even gave me, like, you killed a whole cow for him. You haven't even given me, like, a little scrawny goat so that I could celebrate with my friends. Like, that's messed up. He says, but when this son of yours, he doesn't even call him his brother. He's like, when this son of yours, I don't even know him, who has devoured your assets with things like prostitutes and just the worst ways. He says, you slaughtered the fattened calf for him? You invested more money into your relationship with him? And the dad looks at him. He says, son, man, you are always with me. And everything that I have is yours. He says, but we had to celebrate and we had to rejoice because this brother of yours is not son of mine. It's also a brother of yours, was dead and is alive again. He was lost, but now he's found. Do you see what God thinks when God thinks about you? Do you see how God views it? Like, do you see his heart for you and how much he cares and how much love and his compassion that he has? I mean, think about it. He truly, really wants a relationship with each and every one of us. Now, that's a good feeling, and that is 100% truth, but contrast that reality with the also reality of there being hell, meaning that God is perfectly just and he must punish sin, that he has to punish sin, meaning that is right. This is the right thing for him to do. It's funny because, you know, the world out there, we all love justice and everything until we're on the wrong side of it. And then we're like, whoa, what about forgiveness? Like, I think that's better. Like, we don't need justice in this particular situation. See, the justice, what's truly right, is every single one of us, including myself, we rightfully deserve hell. But God took off his glory, wrapped himself in a human body, came down to the dirt, lived a perfect life. He died eventually so that we could truly live. We just have to make a decision to give our lives to him. And it's a free will that he's given us. It's a choice that he has allowed us. We get to choose to have a relationship with him, or we get to choose to do life our own way. In which case, we're paying for everything we've ever done ourselves someday. See, the reality is that some of us are so stubborn that we got to hit rock bottom like the first son before we could choose to surrender to God. And what's crazy to me is that God cares so much about each and every one of us, each and every lost one, that he decided on the best plan to reach all of those lost ones is to send you. Like, think about it. If you're a Christian, which not everybody in this room is, right? Just because you call yourself a Christian does not make you a Christian, okay? Not truly, not really, not in God's eyes at least. Meaning, when I mean Christian, I mean at some point in your life, you have specifically made the decision to fully surrender your life to Jesus, okay? And to put all your eggs in his basket. You're like, okay, I'm putting 100% of my faith in Jesus, not in Jesus and anything, not in my good stuff or religious stuff or whatever. It's only in Jesus. So if you've made that decision in your life, I'm just saying, all right? Like, if you're sitting here, which is hopefully the majority of us, like, think about it. The God's best way to reach all of those ones out there, he says, is by sending you. That's the job he left us with. His last conversation that Jesus had with his boys, or with his group, his crew, his disciples, he gathers them up. He takes them up to this big hill. And on top of that hill, he says, here's the deal, guys. I want you to go. Let's see. Again, the problem is that most of us, we don't go. We stay in our little comfortable group, the people that we're familiar with. We don't go out. And that's an issue. He says, no, I want you to go out, therefore, and make disciples. I want you to go and I want you to make Jesus followers, meaning I want you to tell people about the really, 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 really great news of what Jesus has done for them, that they can have peace and hope and forgiveness that's only found in him, not in anywhere else. I mean, it's one of Jesus's last moments with these people. And you know what those 11 young, uneducated guys that he was talking to, you know what they did? They went. And people, really, like we should, and people all over the world begin giving their lives to Jesus. See, the first 300 years of Christianity, man, it was not easy. I mean, I remember years ago, I had to kind of research this for school back in the day. And as I'm reading, like, first-hand accounts of different things that Christians had to go through, I mean, it is bloody, it is gory, it is terrible, it is horrifying, some of the things that Christians had to go through simply because they believed in Jesus and simply because they wouldn't shut up about Jesus. And what it did for me is it gave me a sense of, like, thankfulness. You know what I mean? Like, I'm so glad they went through that so that I have the ability to know the truth today. I mean, Christians were thrown into the Colosseum. I mean, that happened all the time. They faced lions without weapons. I mean, they were torn to pieces as crowds cheered for them and for the animals and just all this stuff. They would actually, you know what they would do? They would light different arenas with burning Christians that were still alive and staked to crosses. That's how they would light arenas. I mean, Christians were clothed in animal skin and thrown to hungry dogs. They were burned alive. They were thrown off buildings. They were drugged through streets by horses. I mean, there was all different kinds of ways that they died. I mean, this happened all the time because the first 300 years of Christianity after Jesus died and rose again, it was illegal in the Roman Empire to be Christian. In fact, if you were a Christian and that got out, you were killed. Men, women, children. One of my favorite quotes is one time there's this governor, a Roman governor named Pliny. And he writes to the emperor at the time, which was Trajan, which was his like boss. And this is about 112 AD. And I love this. And this governor, his issue is, he's like, I've been rounding up and killing these Christians. But I'm as I've interviewed them, as I've talked to them, I'm not exactly sure where they're wrong. Like I don't exactly understand the threat that they have to society, but I'm still killing them. Right? This is what he says. And so he's writing to the emperor saying, hey, give me some guidance on some of this. This is what he writes. He says, for the moment, this is the line that I have taken with all persons brought before me on the charge of being Christians. Now remember, this guy is not a Christian at all. He kills Christians, okay? So he's like, this is where I'm at. He says, when someone who gets brought before me in court, when they come to me and they're accused of being a Christian, he says, first of all, I ask them in person if they are in fact a Christian. And if they say, yeah, I am a Christian, then I repeat the question a second and a third time, and I give them chances to take it back with a warning of the punishment that was awaiting them. So I give them a second chance and a third chance, and I reminded them, hey, listen, here's the deal. Like, if you call yourself a Christian, if you say that you truly are one, I have to kill you. Right? There's like severe punishment that comes along with that. He says, and then if they persist, and they're like, well, but I am. He says, I order them to be led away for punishment for whatever the nature of their omission. And I am convinced after dealing with so many of these Christians that their stubbornness and unshakable obstinacy ought to be punished. He's basically writing the emperor, he's saying, I can't break these people. They aren't afraid of punishment. They will not take back their Christianity. They will not change their beliefs, even if there is punishment associated with it. He says, there have been others similarly fanatical who are Roman citizens. That was a higher class than most of the people living under Roman rule. And he says, I have entered them on the list of persons to be sent to Rome, and there they could be killed there. He says, I consider that I should dismiss any, right? I will let any of them free if they just denied that they were or had been Christians. He says, but they had to do three things. Number one, they had to repeat after me this certain formula of invocation to the gods that had been and had made offerings of wine and incense to your statue. So he's kind of sucking up here. He's like, this is all Christians have to do. They have to say, oh wait, I'm not a Christian, and they have to worship these fake gods, and they have to worship the emperor's statue that he had brought in. He's going to say that next into the courtroom for this purpose, along with the images of the gods. He says, and furthermore, I had them curse the name of Jesus. This is all they had to do. All right, you curse Jesus, you worship these gods, you worship the emperor, we are good to go. But he's like, but real Christians, as I have found out, as I understand, they can never be induced to do any of these things. They won't do it. He says, they declared that the sum of the total of their guilt or error amounted to no more than this. He's like, they're saying all they've done is that they meet regularly before dawn on a fixed day. That would have been Sunday morning, just like what we're doing here today, to go through verses of the Bible and alternately among themselves in honor of Jesus, as if Jesus was even a god. He says, and also they bind themselves by oath, to not for any criminal purpose, not to like, you know, we're going to go get these people. No, but to abstain from things like theft and robbery and adultery and to commit no breach of trust. And if someone wants their money back from borrowing it, that they give it back. He says, after this ceremony, or what we would call church, he says, it had been their custom to disperse and later to take food of any ordinary harmless kind, meaning they had lunch together. He says, but they had in fact given this up. They didn't do lunch anymore since my law issued on your instructions, which banned all political societies. So when I said you couldn't do that, they actually gave that up. But they still kept meeting on Sundays. He says, this made me decide that it was all the more necessary to actually extract the truth, right, from these Christians. And so he says, so what I did was I grabbed two slave women. And again, back in this time, slaves were not, it was not a race thing, right? So it just wasn't. That's not how the Roman Empire operated. It was a class thing. He says, so I grabbed two slave women who are Christians, and they're called deaconesses, not sure what that is. He says, and I tortured them. And as I tortured them, I was trying to get all the true information out, and I found nothing but a degenerate sort of cult-like religion carried to extravagant lengths. He says, so therefore, I've postponed any further examination and hastened to consult you. He's like, what do you want me to do with these Christians? I can't find any fault in them. That doesn't actually, they're, it seems committed to doing a bunch of good things. But they also won't obey, and they won't worship you, and they won't worship the gods, and they won't curse Jesus. Like, what do you want me to do with these people? They're so stubborn. See, that is our heritage as a Christian. We are only here because of people like these. Like, think about this. You get that? You are only sitting in your seat today. I am only on this stage today because people like these two slave women refused to shut up, even when they knew it would cost them their life. See, telling others our job, our mission, our purpose that Jesus gave us has been with us since the beginning. I mean, I've been to church conferences, retreats, and mission trips, and church events, and all this stuff, all right? I've been a Christian for a long time. I've done all this stuff. And usually at the end of some sort of conference or whatever, you know, it goes something like this. It's like, hey, you know, you want to see God reveal himself to the world, and everybody's all pumped up and amped up, and it's like, yeah, you know, and it's like, you want to see revival in our nation, and everybody's like, yeah, we do, and it's like, you want to see God reach your city, everybody's like, yeah, yeah, and so it's like, so let's go out and tell all the lost friends and our coworkers about Jesus, and everybody's like, that might be too awkward. See, there's this like tension with Christians, and I'm sure you felt it, where it's like we want a life of purpose and we want a life of meaning. We want our life to count for something, and Jesus gives us that. In fact, our purpose and our meaning is actually the greatest purpose you could possibly have. And that purpose, by the way, in case you're a little confused, is not to like retire well, all right, or to raise our kids well. That purpose is to tell as many people as we can about what Jesus has done for them. That's our purpose in life, yet we're too scared to tell people. Man, it should bother you. It should eat at your soul that people around you are headed to hell. Man, that should not sit right. That should make you uneasy. That should make you feel sick. And that should motivate you to take action and to do something, to actually go, like Jesus says, and to tell them the truth. Because we as Christians, we are to get how valuable each lost one actually is to God. I mean, that's why here at Grace, individually and as a team, we try to reach everyone, right? How big do we want to get? We want to reach everyone. That's what we're going after. And by the way, we should be telling people about Jesus. We should be having those spiritual conversations with our roommates and, you know, our coworkers and people on our team and, you know, our neighbors and all that kind of stuff, all right? But some of us, we're just like, we're too scared to do that, which is messed up, by the way. All right, people died so that you can know, and then we're like, I'm uncomfortable, so I'm not going to, you know, it's just messed up. But the easiest thing you could possibly do, like at least invite them to church. Like if you don't want to have a full-out conversation, or you're too scared, like what if they ask me a question I don't know, or whatever your excuses are, at least invite them to church where someone on stage will do it. See, next Sunday we have a big Sunday. I mean, we're launching our Sandusky campus. All right, by the way, if you're like, I'm going to go check that out, don't. Okay, at least not for like a couple months, because we are worried about space. It's a lot smaller than this room, and so we think we're going to blow the doors off that place. Here at Tiffin at 9:15, we're starting our theater venue that we're just doing for our first and second service people to give up their seats to free up some space. So we're excited about that. On Thursday of this week, all right, basically 124,017 homes around us here in Northwest Ohio. Those are people, those are our coworkers, our neighbors, our friends, and our family. They'll all get a personal invite to a new series that we're starting next Sunday in the mail. And during that series, what I'm going to try to attempt next Sunday is I'm going to attempt to explain why our world is the way that it is. And going back all the way to the beginning of the Bible for the first three chapters, it's interesting because it really explains everything. And so I'm just saying, like, if you're looking for the best week to invite someone to church, like, this is it, people. You know, like we're here. It's it. It's this next week. And what should motivate us and remind us is that God loves the lost ones so much. He's like a dad begging the people around us for a relationship. And he gave you to the unsaved people in your life and in your little world. And we're to be for everyone, doing whatever we can, to save at least one more. Let's pray. God, we thank you for this team that you've given us. We thank you for this church as we try to reach as many people as we possibly can. And God, there's so much good stuff. I mean, it's been over the last 6 years. From next Sunday, it'll be 6 years that we've been here. God, we've seen so many people give their lives to you and growing in the relationship with you. And God, we thank you so much. But Lord, it's not like we're done yet. Like, I think you have a lot more planned for our community in our area than what we could even dream of. And all that we need to do is just obey. But God, so many times we don't do it because we're more worried about our comfort than the people that we should be sharing the truth with. And God, we ask that you would help break us of that. Help it to bother us. Help it to irritate us. Help it to just not sit well within us that people around us that we care about and that we love might be on the road to hell simply by rejecting you or putting you off. God, we ask that you would use us. Lord, we thank you for loving us and for being a good dad. God, we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.